and the edges between times grown harder, and sun spreads boiling crabs across the mud brash road. Eating light vinegar as the fat wannabe plums we plunder from the thorn with unwaged fingers. They are the death of summer, corset clench of darkness round each subaltern stone, so far from sheltering cows or balding blossoms. Yet there is hope even in their first frosting. The utter drunken cry slapped from our baffled lungs as the throttle of gin delivers us to a newborn drunken year.
Newborn drunken year, on the way. Except we have, you see in front of you, you've got some brochures for the Shannonside Music Festival in January. We have the organiser here with us, John Lyon. He's going to come up and sing us a song.
Very good.
Okay, thanks very much, Paul, and thanks to Seamus Hamilton and Murray Woods who were in the contact as well.
Yes!
Yeah. Festival. Festival. He said to me, it's a great festival, it's incredible. You have to be there to realize it. There's no poetic words to describe it, really. It's brilliant. And you're the poet, it's fantastic, and thanks to Paul. So I sing your songs. Go goodbye to the river, it's going to be an environmental thing. It's, my voice is in Cape Clear Island, actually. After all the years gone on, yeah. Goodbye to the river, goodbye to the trees, goodbye to the night birds that sing in the breeze. They're building a dam, but it's too late to cry. Oh, Brazos, adios, adios, goodbye. I loved you in springtime when the wildflowers bloom, and I loved your summer skies with big yellow moon. I loved you in autumn when the whippoorwill calls, but I love your people most of all. Goodbye to the river, goodbye to the trees, goodbye to the night birds that sing in the breeze. They're building a dam, but it's too late to cry. Oh, Brazos, adios, adios, goodbye. They'll dam up your waters, they'll cover all your land, and they'll chalk it all down to advancement of man. Goodbye to the river, goodbye to the trees, goodbye to the night birds that sing in the breeze. They're building a dam, but it's too late to cry. Oh, Brazos, adios, adios, goodbye. Goodbye to the river, goodbye to the trees, goodbye to the night birds that sing in the breeze.
great to God. Oh, Basil, there he goes, and he owes goodbye.
Friday night in the Manor Hotel, 11 o'clock, there's a big session Friday night, and I hope you all be there 5 o'clock in the Creamery Bar upstairs, and come early for the folk pack, so it'll be, it's an amazing festival. Thank you. Thank you very much, and thanks for all.
Right, so yeah, Uwell's going to be putting on an over at the Shannonside Music Festival as well, so it's going to be poetry on the Saturdays.
Yeah, if they're looking for a accommodation, there's lots of them. If you want, just give my number, Paul, and we'll arrange cheap accommodation for you as well.
You hear that?
Yeah.
Three beds for all poets.
Very cheap anyway.
Thanks,
only €5 or something.
Just write the poem and you've got a bed.
Next up, can we have Mary O'Connell.
This is a Christmas poem. It's called A Country Christmas, 1920. The days before Christmas glowed through the gloaming, like the delf on the dresser, the logs in the grate. Ice round the pump caught the fire of the stars. Shocked hands felt the burning of frost on the gate. On Christmas Eve morning, the house stirred to life. Teresa chopped suet while Nan washed the plates. The goose was brought down from a hook in the rafters. The bills had been paid with a check from the States. At one, they sat down to salt fish and white sauce with big flowery spuds that came out piping hot. They scrubbed down the deal and stacked some fresh turf. The pillow-slipped pudding grew plump in the pot. The kitchen was scented with spices and ham. Pots hissed on the hob as Nell threaded some leaves of red-berried holly and fashioned a bough to hang in the window just under the eaves. 6 half-pound candles, a gift from the grocer, each wedged in a turnip, were lit after tea. Since Nan was the youngest, she said the Hail Marys. They melt in the shadows, not needing a tree. Down in the valley, like jewels in the darkness, in windows were seen tiny pinpricks of light. To welcome the traveller, the poor and the lonely, and blaze out the gladness of this special night.
Thank you, Mary. We're getting into the Christmas spirit now. Next, we have Seamus Harrington.
Thanks, Paul. Briefing at 1800. Now listen up, you'll wait for my signal of semaphore winds. We leave no turn, up, upbeat and away, then wheel down and over these sandy mountain sands as we end our sojourn. Recheck your sonar, the first wave of 2000. Remember the drill, a silver blur for the lensman. Our climb will be steep with no afterburn. Leave the stacks of Poolbeg, first waypoint to starboard. Now that grounded heron with her excess burden is not your concern. Veer with your wingman, he knows the nocturne. Maintaining formation, on course we'll return. Watch out for jets, they'd swallow a flock. No foul ups as the crow flies. In line abreast, I'll be on station, directly astern on the fly past. Thank you.
Thank you, Seamus. Next we have Ray Hanrahan.
We live in a world of narrative dimension. One word started it all, and a safe word can stop all the suffering. However, this word must not be said, or the freedom of humanity is over. Flesh, blood, stone, and water will just melt into words on a page, and the only free being will be the master narrator.
Thank you, Ray. Next, we have Jason Fisher.
A poem I wrote, it does not rhyme. I only see you in my dreams. I only dream when I go to bed drunk. I am an alcoholic. See you tonight.
Thank you, Jason. I don't know if this is the best company for you to be in. But I'm sure you have a good time. Next we have Patricia Walsh.
It's totally on Christmas here, but you get the drift. I'm just going to mask it. A hardened glitch calls up for attention. Comprehensible conditions eliminate forever. Torch singer belting out the air. To live forever is a colonialist position. What you represent, you are. Take that with you next time you run off, weeping, unhardened by proof. Complicating all that is good and so-so. Ready to greet the man when he comes again. Mortal sin isn't really used anymore. Death in your own tea time, a rite of passage. Not knowing where you stand, the buffoon's delight. Take you by the hand and eat your soul. Multitude of wrongs making you right. Confusions guide you the results you want after much wrangling. Suited and booted, locked in a whirligig, producing outcomes are hitting the nerve. Clean whitewashed floors still welcome the confusion. Sticky within reason, burning for sense. Plush carpet soaked in a weatherized sand. One peculiar to the events belong to dry. A figurehead of indifference rings true. Long after the wine and nibbles have departed. Advertising folly, a treat for being wise. We can live long after you are gone. Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia. Next up we have Michał Johar Weber of the Choke Collective.
Max Creedon got this CD for sale, right? There's Joe Harp on it. There's fucking Joe Harp on it. Right? So, just go and buy it. Like this.
How much?
It's, Max, how much is it?
£10 for charity.
£10 for charity, yeah. There's Joe Harp on it.
There's
Joe Harp on it. I'm not gonna play Joe Harp now, right? I play Joe Harp with Kieran later. I'm gonna sing a song. It's a very, very old song from southeastern Poland. Right, I'm from the north. I remember times when back in 1980s Polish people were driving home for Christmas from Sweden to Poland on the frozen down Baltic Sea, right? So yeah, I'm not from there. But I'm gonna sing their language. A w niedzielę, poszło dziewczę po ziele, oj, oj, po ziele. Wzięła z sobą snopek nić, snopek nić, snopek nić i zaczyno zionek zić, zionek zić, oj, oj, zionek zić. Przyszedł po nią jakiś pan, jakiś pan, jakiś pan. Był to z piekła sam satan, sam satan, oj, oj, sam satan. Jak ją porwał, tak ją wiózł, tak ją wiózł. Ponad pola, ponad las, oj, oj, ponad las. Nie wieź ziemię, ponad las, ponad las, bo mi będzie w oczy blask, oj, oj, w oczy blask. Tylko wieś mnie doliną, doliną, to me smutki przeminą, przeminą, oj, oj, przeminą. Zajechali pod piekło, pod piekło, zawadzili o okno, okno, oj, oj, o okno. Piekło się zawaliło, zwaliło, zwaliło, wszystkich diabłów zabiło, zabiło, oj, oj, zabiło.
We are pressed for time now, so please can we keep it short. Next we have Charles Clark.
Is it possible? Is it at all possible?
Overheard in a hotel bar in Harcourt Street, Dublin, took down the shotgun that shot the sister. Apparently, a farmer from County Meath, apparently, is the hotel still in existence? Is the bar still licensed?
Thank you, Charles. Next we have Patrick Connor.
Okay, it won't be as long as the song. I don't normally introduce poems, but on this occasion I feel I have to. In Madagascar, whether you're Muslim, Christian, or animist, there's a tradition of worshipping your ancestors, and the custom associated therewith is disinterring the body 3 to 5 years after burial, cleaning the bones of any organic accoutrement, dressing the bones in silk, reburying whilst throwing a huge party. This poem is called Dinka. The Dinka are a nation in Sudan. During the 70s, 80s, and 90s, they were very popular subjects of famous photographers. They were once deemed to be the tallest people on the face of the planet. They suffered such deprivations due to the war in the last few decades that they've shrunk collectively as a nation. Ironically, one of the famous photographers attracted to them was Leni Riefenstahl, who was Hitler's most famous favorite photographer. She lived to be over 100. She lived into the century. If Hitler had seen Riefenstahl's photographs of the Dinka, he would have had to relinquish all notions that the most perfect specimen of humanity was Nordic in origin. So I've published worse poems than this, so I believe that my failure to find an editor to accept this poem is down to its, in inverted commas, miscegenation theme, trying not to mirror Dennis Wodisco's the next poem. Okay, Dinka. Beware, Madagascar. There's too much white in me to make a Dinka, even with you. See this one, an obelisk of a man. 5 boys with coltish limbs could climb and cling from him as from a tree. His skin black as a coiling eel in my ceramic sink. The map of his body a riposte to a Breitbart's writer's broken dream. His rested cock pendulous and heavy as an iron chisel. His tongue a skinned strawberry glistening on coal. Place him in a Venetian square. Watch him negotiate the empty space as if still weaving away between the scimitars of his cattle's white horns. The cattle yet yielding milk from the dry season's ashy earth. The cattle of a Nubian tawn whose horned heroic head sits on the shoulders of a pharaonic god, minion and messenger of Amun. Dinka, giant man, so short in years, none grow slack or grey. Sculpture of flesh, perfect unto death. Choose me and you will have white, white hair. A man of uncooked dough to love you to the grave. White as the bones inside of me. The bones you would dig up, dress in the reddest silk, so I would be benevolent after death to our sons who could not be Dinka. Thank you.
Thank you, Bart. Next we have Mary Sutton.
So I'm aware that there's a phrase in this poem that isn't very common in Ireland, and that is packing a bowl. So packing a bowl is, it's to pack like a pipe or something with a green. So here it is, it's the name of this poem.
What's green? Explain it more clearly.
What do you mean marijuana?
Marijuana, yeah, Mary Jane.
Medical cannabis.
Herbal.
I'm from California, okay.
Don't worry, we've got 40 shades of marijuana here.
At least you are. At least you're not from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it's
tricky. Or Philadelphia.
Colorado.
Alright, here it goes.
Philadelphia.
Can we talk about it, please? Because I'm really sick of packing a bowl to help me sleep or eat with the same song on repeat. I think about exactly how you treat me. 98% of the time, I'm over it, done with it. But that 2% still fucking runs with it. That's you percent, past due percent, remnants of all the good times and bad lies and exactly why I'm through. 98 is still bigger than 2.
Woo.
Thank you, Mary. Next up, we have Rob Urquhart.
Which poet has more statues of him all over the world than any other poet?
Robbie Burns.
Okay, so here's our request. My father was a farmer from up on the Carrick border, and carefully he raised me in dignity and order. He bade me act a manly part, though I never had a farthing. For without an honest, manly heart, no man was worth regarding. So out into the world, my course I did determine. Though to be rich was not my wish, to be great was charming. My talents, they were not the worst, nor yet my education. Resolve was I, at least he tried to mend my situation. Through many a way and vain essay, I courted fortune savor, some cause unseen, still step between to frustrate each endeavor. Sometimes by foes I was overpowered, sometimes by friends forsaken. And when my hope was at the top, I still was worst mistaken. And then sore harassed and tired at last with fortune's vain delusion, I dropped my schemes like idle dreams, and I came to this conclusion. The past is dead, the future's hid, it's good or ill untried. But the present hour is in my power, and so I will enjoy it. Woo!
Thank you, Rob. Next we have Cedric Bicombe.
So this one is titled Beach Black. How do you expect to be seen when you are cloaked in darkness? You need to carry your light. Through the labyrinth of life, accept that others, blind until it's too late, will bump into you, make bruises that will remain hidden by your very nature. You all walk through the many nights till you see the dawn, when then start a new strife, strange spell of existences in human fate. Testing everything that makes you dig, bring out the best and the worst you can nurture. It will only matter how thick your leather. There is not white and black after dark. Only who can stand after the fight. If you still have your heart, lower your knife. Be a beacon. Do not be ashamed to paint the good in others, to feed and grow it, and yourself until you mature. Until you rise and turn so bright, the night is no more. So bright, there is nothing to fight for. So bright, they realize neither black nor white is a color.
Thank you, Cedric. That's fabulous. We have Michelle Delay next.
Alright. Okay.
Can
guys. This is called exhaustion. Come Friday evening and greet me expressionless and expressionlessly, please. Tonight put the crises on ice, this is all I can suffice. I miss the feeling of alrightness, is there any space for flightlessness? In this structured schedule I don't feel well. It's relentless among the blinded witnesses, is naught but noisiness. I'm conscious of my nauseousness and chest tightness, I don't feel well. I know you can tell and see the swell in me, that certain breed of hell between my surface and its clampment, till that damp temple where walls are wetter than it is outside, and inside I pace and pace until shoe soles erode the floor below, and all that breaks 12-foot falls is numbness. I plummet to the next space, a similar room but dimmer, and basins but stubborn and threatening, when I'm doomed for dimmer, lest I can stand stiller. A stance and posture of power and comfort is what I wish for. But it's comforting to keep walking when you feel fear, to be forward moving through a room, a space, even if it's circling, retreading your own displace. At least it's not your stationary self you face. To keep falling through, recycling your ground for a ceiling, this we don't have a tendency to do. When below there are no rooms, ground instead erodes you from the soles up to the view of the holes you fell through. Though blurred are you, eyes know and stide instinctively. These gaps frame the sky so simply, and having been adjusting to the lack of electric lighting brings stars into view. And the longer you let this looking ensue, the more you can grasp the depths of the new stars that trust and undress for you. After taking light in that's always been up for grabs, I can gather all I can. I feed fingertips to nature's ladder, not gaps in a damp wall, but my space bleeding into them, forming an escape plan. My tentacles cooperate, and all of them remember in the right direction, every limb orchestrating impulse proving its truth. Soon I'll meet you on the roof, and now I'm racing to thank you for waiting as long as it's taken me to eventually let the light in within again. Thank you. Wow.
Next we have our firework champ, Jenny Sparks.
So this is my last time speaking here because I'm heading back to the U.S. So I just want to say thanks for like making this event exist, because it's super cool and I really enjoyed it. So as a parting gift, I do this at every venue that I'm leaving as my last poem. This is the first poem I ever presented in front of people ever. It's only from about 18 months ago, so it's not that significant. So here it is. Still not. I should let you know in advance that this is not an apology. As the chronology of this speech plays out, it may appear to be saying sorry, but I assure you, this was never supposed to be an apology. See, I was 16 and suicidal, slumped solemnly in the seat in the office of the head of the psych ward I had just been admitted to. I was 16 and suicidal, and I was guilty. I was sorry. She looked me straight in the eye and said, "Suicide is selfish, and so are you." And I said, "I know. I'm sorry." I apologized. I apologized for a disease just as diagnosable, just as quantifiable, just as real as cancer or arthritis or scoliosis. I apologized. I apologized for letting my pain mar her idyllic vision of the world as if I didn't want desperately to see it the way she did. She told me I didn't understand the gravity of the situation, as if the 29 pills I'd downed weren't intended to be grave, or at least to dig me one. But I still thought that all of this was my fault. It was my fault that my sister had cried. It was my fault that part of my mother had died that day. It was my fault that my best friend now spoke to me like an invalid, that my brother now looked at me the way he did, the way everyone did. I was guilty, and I was sorry, and to be totally honest with you, some days I still am. But this is not an apology. This is not an apology because I've written 8 drafts of this poem so far, and I still can't find a blunter way to say that I blame you. I blame you for all those kids who go in and out and in and out of your ward. I blame you. This is not an apology. No, this is a prophecy. Because someday, some way, there will be a child that knows that they're not worth the food you're feeding them, not worth the cell they're living in, the words people tell them, because they truly believe what you've said, that suicide is selfish, and so are they. And to them, I have to say, I hope that one day you can stand up and tell them that the rest of your life is not an apology, because they never should have convinced you they deserved one.
Wow. Happy journey. It's a fabulous first poem. Well done. We hope to see you back in Cork, and best of luck. Hope you keep going with the poetry. We've got just three left on the list. Next up we have Patrick Lochner.
The title of the poem is in Portuguese, it's O Meio da Língua, which translates to English as the middle of the tongue, and it's about a conversation I had in the sister language of Portuguese. Try to get your mouth around this fish with more conviction in your expression than you have in its translation. Wonder at your salivating while your tongue thralls through memories for a taste lost to a vegetarian. Just don't speak with the tip of your tongue. Instead, strain it against impulse, against the roof of your mouth. And note how even half a tongue can bridge your ignorance and its past to meet another halfway.
Thank you, Patrick. Next we have Teresa Honan.
Misty rainbow arched to Shandon Bells as I walked across the River Lee. Then all at once I saw a flock of geggling seagulls over Pope's Quay. The rain was falling out at sea, and they had found shelter in the lee. A white so bright I have never seen as their white feathers in the silver light that glimmered in the midday sun and shimmered from the River Lee. I watched enthralled as they connected, yakking and acking as they met in midair, face to face at times as they reunited, passion, excitement, and sheer glee. I walked along alone uplifted, for I had felt their joy the grief.
I walked along alone uplifted, for a lovely, lovely. Okay, thank you so much. We've just got one more act tonight. We have Kieran and Michał of the Choke Collective who are gonna rock us out for 2016, and here they are.
When you curl up your page, it often misses the lip at the end of the music sound.
as I've just found out. I was trying to put my page down. But anyway, this poem was written in 2016, and I think when I look back on the date, it's probably going to make sense why that was. Yeah, I was going to back me up. Thank you for the words tonight, they were unreal. Loved it.
Unreal.
Loved it. Alright. This is a historical letter of an anonymous figure's response to the question, what would you do with a lot of money? This figure now has a lot of money.
Hang on a minute. Let me just sort of close it up. Yeah. Get your arm off of the microphone. There you go.
Grab that roadie. And our director. And some other jobs. Okay, sorry to keep you waiting. We're here now. If I had lots of money, I'd buy a politician and I'd tell him to tell everybody, shut up and listen. I want everybody with 2.5 prominent veins in their right hand to get out. And everybody in the room would look at their right hand. And those with 2.5 prominent veins would slip back into its pocket, while the arm that leads to the shoulder shapes coldly for the exit and dips. And then the walls would be up. The cement would be given status then. Some would notice the trademarks of the bricklayer's style as the walls are examined thoroughly. Outside, prominently veined hands would move in gestures in sync with the rhythm of the voice that is always near, as they argue about whether they should go back in or raise the place to the ground, or go back in and raise the place to the ground, while making lots of noise that was injected into the room by a syringe of a body wearing a suit, the receipt for which I've seen and filed. And I'd sit alone in the thinning room, and to my guy I'd say hi, and then I'd challenge him on everything he says. And then the couple next to me would argue about whether I was obnoxious or an opportunist. Everyone would differ on how my words sat with them, and begin to look at the bright lights of the stage with a new sense of awe. And nobody would wonder whether I was I or I was my guy. They'd be so busy looking to get violent together with those that get violent, they wouldn't even notice someone sitting alone, peacefully. What was once 1,000 became 1, and then divided into 9, and only because I like the number 9. 2 contradicting forces and a splinter group who don't believe in force outside the building. 2 sets of quarreling believers in a big hall, a small blue-eyed child asleep in a pram. My guy, a man with a recording camera, and me. And while the splinter group and the nursing child disagree with my guy and my cameraman, I give myself the casting vote.